Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Hey, good day, America. Hey, you know, while this is recorded earlier, it airs on Saturday mornings, and this is a Saturday we can celebrate. We're seeing a return to personal liberty in America, regardless of the media narrative. Free speech, freedom of religion, economic liberty, they're all making a comeback in the first few months of the Trump administration. And thanks to you, our Pirate Money Radio team, you've made your voices heard. So join me in celebration this morning. We've got Mike Carter with us. Mike, how are you feeling today?
Well, I'm full of caffeine, ready to go for the day. It's been a very, very action-packed week. We're fitting a week into one day every day now, so yeah. 24/7.
Weary from travels, grateful for victories, steeled for challenges. How many different locations have you been in the past few weeks?
Oh, gosh, we've been hitting everything. Texas, you've been up in Oklahoma, Arkansas, Florida. We got Louisiana coming up. We've got a couple of new states coming on, potentially. I had a legislator reach out to us from Pennsylvania. And then we've got the whole, you know, legislation happening all the way across Tennessee, Utah. It's hard to keep up. It's been nonstop travel. We've been educating not only grassroots in each of these states, but working with legislators to help get this through committees and on its way to floor votes. And it's been an amazing process.
And what you're talking about is pirate money. This is Pirate Money Radio. What we're talking about is transactional gold and silver, where you can use gold and silver like money with a debit card. You can pay for your stuff. You can hold your money in the form of gold and silver. If it's made legal at the state level, then it is legal tender currency, and it shouldn't be taxed by the federal government, and it should be a way to escape all of the horrors of central bank digital currency, inflation, you know, the threats to the dollar and all of that. But we have a win, and I want you to share it. And we got to do a shout out to our friend Laurie, who has been pushing this hard. Tell us about the win.
Yeah, the win is in Arkansas. And we've got Rod Martin here today, so it's appropriate. The win, Arkansas is the first of, and they've had gold and silver as legal tender already, but people couldn't use that. And so legislators there, Representative McClain and Senator Dodson, said, hey, we need to make this functional for people. And so we're simply looking for a free market approach that will allow them to recognize electronic transfer of gold and silver, let the free markets work with a gold depository, and give Arkansans a chance to have pirate money. Everybody can. Now, it will be legal tender, functional currency. It's a big, big idea, and it's kind of fun to see Walmart, you know, coming from out of nowhere with a surprise thing, and we're going to the Capitol.
Yeah, it was shocking. I'm buying multiple tickets for team members and getting hotel rooms and everything else to be in the great city of Little Rock, Arkansas. You know, we thought we had our ultimate win in Utah. And it might still be a win, but the governor vetoed the legislation, and there's a potential override. But here, we've got Governor Sarah Sanders, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, incredible woman as governor. Maybe, hate to say it, Governor Abbott, but Governor Sanders, I think maybe the top in the country now. Governor DeSantis, you can come along and catch up, but no, Governor Sarah Sanders, just an amazing woman.
She is, and certainly as it relates to this legislation, Arkansas is leading. Florida's looking very encouraging. Many states, so that's what's so exciting. And it always gets down to the clock and watching the calendar and the final minutes here, but so many states moving this forward in an aggressive way, and with Arkansas officially signing, and we'll be at that signing ceremony, I believe this is a catalyst for many more states to come. So yeah. Not only this legislative session, but as we go into the next year as well.
You know, a lot of this is dealing with money. We call it Pirate Money Radio. Sometimes it all comes down to simple economics and money. We'll be talking with Rod Martin about that. But there are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, you can spend it, or you can invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room, Pirate Money Radio, it's all available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. And speaking of money, you may have noticed some scary headlines about a trade war coming, indicating higher prices, maybe a recession. Is this a Great Depression? Because last time we had a big trade war, it ended like that. So we've got joining us to discuss the implication of Trump's trade war and tariffs is our friend Rod Martin. Rod, by the way, worked for another Huckabee in Little Rock, Arkansas, a lifetime ago. But if you've been following rodmartin.org, you realize he is on fire. He is one of the leading intellectuals in America today. He's conservative. He loves Jesus. He has over 200,000 followers on X right now, and I've watched that just balloon as he started publishing. 22,000 subscribers on his rodmartin.org Substack, and he is bringing it. Welcome, Rod, to Pirate Money Radio.
Great to be here.
You know, Rod, I think my IQ has gone up a couple points. I've been reading these constant Substacks and what's going on, and my dinner conversations have been enlightening. I no longer talk about pirate money only. I can talk about all these other geopolitical things. So between Kevin and between Rod, these are the sources to really understand what's going on out there geopolitically, economically, culturally. It's exciting to have you on as part of our team here, Rod, but really exciting to see what you do on the Substack.
You are lighting it up, man.
I appreciate it. And, you know, we need that kind of analysis today. Geopolitical analysis may sound high and mighty, but the truth is we're in a very interdependent world. And what happens in China affects what happens in Kansas. What happens in Ukraine affects what happens in New York. And if we don't understand how all those pieces fit together in a holistic way, we can't make good policy decisions and we can't nominate the right candidates for public office. So rodmartin.org, that's your go-to solution. I encourage everybody to sign up.
Well, and I'll echo that. I mean, if you want to understand these things, you can turn on the TV and they'll give you a two-minute soundbite. And it's high and mighty nonsense. It doesn't explain anything. It doesn't put it in simple language. What rodmartin.org does is put it in plain language that you can understand, that's thought through. It's intellectual, but it's not at a highbrow level to where you can't understand it. I mean, that's what intellectuals do, is they try and scare you with all these fancy words and make it impossible to understand. You're like, oh, they're smart. I should put them in charge. Rod does the opposite. He skewers the so-called brilliant people, and he brings common sense, homespun wisdom, and ideas from a guy that's got, you know, a genius-level IQ. You really are doing a great job. And you know who picked this up? Charles Payne on Fox Business. Did you see that segment?
I did see that, yes. Yeah, and I'm glad Charles Payne is picking it up, but I'm glad everyday Americans, mainstream Americans, are picking this up because, you know, Kevin, as we've been traveling and talking to groups out there, I see this natural tendency for people to say, oh, well, Trump's got it handled now. We can sit back and relax. It doesn't work that way. You know, we talk about the small ships here, about us all working together, about us, the importance of being up to speed on what's going on and helping other people understand that. Rod, what you're doing, I thank you for that because it gives you those talking points and easy to understand things where you can have those conversations. I actually had a little fun with some conversations with some people outside of Tesla protesting the other day and was pulling on some of the information from your reports and what we do here. They didn't get it, you know, it was amazing to see all of a sudden they were worried about their IRAs and their 401ks and their stock prices. And yeah, it was an interesting dialogue, maybe a little shouting. I did get called a few names. I don't know how that happened, but anyhow, it's fun sometimes to be able to have that conversation, but be able to approach it with, you know, I really do understand what's going on, and let me help you understand in a collaborative way. But anyhow,
Rod, we're going to need you to help us understand what are tariffs. We've got half a minute, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come right back. What are tariffs?
Tariffs are taxes on goods that are imported, but a lot of our friends misunderstand how they're being used. They see it as a tax on consumers. That's not really what's happening. What's happening is other countries are using tariffs to make it impossible to sell American products in their markets without saying so. And that's what Trump's taking on. Trump was very clear in the G7 meeting in 2018. He wants fully free trade, no tariffs, no trade barriers of any sort. And that's where he's headed here. He's using our disproportionate market power as the world's largest consumer market to bludgeon these guys into doing what's right.
Okay, so if you've been told that tariffs are evil and Trump has got this horrible plan, we need to understand what's really going on, and we'll learn more with Rod Martin right after this break.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and I'm joined by Mike Carter, the co-host, and our special guest, our dear friend, Rod Martin, and we were talking about tariffs. Rod, take us back. It's 1776, the founders of this country. What did they think a tariff was, and how did they see it being used in the economy for the government and so forth?
Well, the founders' perspective on it was, first of all, the federal government was going to be very small, which continued to be true into the 20th century. And as a result of that, you really didn't need anything like an income tax, which would have completely horrified them, and did. And so tariffs were a perfectly reasonable way to pay for the operations of a much smaller government. And they did a very particular thing, which was make it cheaper to buy American goods. Well, that's in colonial and immediately post-colonial times, so we didn't have a lot of industry here. And you're actually creating a civilization out of a wilderness. It makes sense to try to do things that favor the development of American industry. There certainly is a mercantilist aspect to that, but nevertheless, that worked for them. What we're seeing now is really quite different from that, except in a handful of spaces. So, for example, one of the spaces where that founder's vision kind of approach definitely applies is in something like rare earth metals, where, you know, we're totally dependent on China, but it's not because we can't produce them. The idea that we don't have rare earths is just silly. What we don't have is rare earths refining capacity. And a lot of that is because of the Green New Deal and things like it that have been designed to hobble countless American industries in the name of environmentalism. But we all know that modern environmentalism is a watermelon. It's green on the outside and red all the way through. It's all about herding you into communism in reality. So we have allowed countries like China to get these huge, huge advantages in refining rare earths manufacturing.
Let's stop for a second and explain rare earths. You're talking lithium, but you're also talking the things that are necessary, the building blocks for the modern economy, for semiconductors, yeah, for AI. Explain that a little bit and what China has done to keep America from actually exploiting the massive amount of rare earth minerals we have in this country.
Well, they have funded, as the Arabs have and the Russians have, lots of people have, they've funded the American environmental movement in large part for decades, my whole lifetime. And the idea, of course, is to keep America from producing the things it most needs and thus making them dominant over those things. That really worked on oil extremely well into the Bush era. In 2007, when oil was at its peak price-wise, we actually sent $700 billion overseas to our enemies for energy. Well, that's absurd. We're the biggest repository of energy on the planet, and we have the capacity to supply Europe, for instance, which is still dependent on Russia after 3 years of war, and just crazy. They should be buying that liquefied natural gas from Louisiana and Texas, not from Moscow. It's just absurd. So we have done things all along the way that were in line with, frankly, our position as the world's largest economy. We're just 4% of the world's population, but we're 26% of the world's economy. And so we have luxury options. We can just outsource our rare earths to China or our pharmaceuticals to China or all these different things on which a modern economy absolutely depends with very little consequence, as long as the only thing you're looking at is the balance sheet. But that's not the only thing. Right now, you know, China has embargoed rare earths. Well, that means you pretty much can't build an F-35 fighter jet unless, or a smartphone or lots of other things, unless you have a stockpile of the stuff. We've got to create refining capacity in the United States. We've got to do some things to shore up national security essential industries. So there is that aspect to the tariffs, but that's not really Trump's aim here. Trump made his aim very clear at the G7 meeting in 2018 when he said, look, I went to Wharton. We all know the ideal outcome is no tariffs and no trade barriers. What Trump knows is all these people sell a lot more to us than we sell to them. That's what that trade deficit is. They need our market. 48% of Germany's economy is exports. Germany is the third largest economy in the world. Without the U.S. market, they're toast. And that's true for China. And that's true for a lot of countries. And Trump is using the tariffs to get them to open their markets to U.S. producers in the way that we've opened our markets to theirs. The logical outcome of this for just about everybody but China is going to be a massive free or close to free trade area that surpasses anything that all of his predecessors were able to achieve.
Okay, well, let's take 2 points in there. One of them is the post-World War II strategy when we were helping to rebuild Europe, because I thought you made a brilliant point at rodmartin.org in your Substack explaining that. And the second one is the whole notion that our goal is to get to zero tariffs. What will that mean? And do we take pain? Is this the art of the deal? Or do we have to show a willingness to take pain in the short term to win the big deal? So cover those two. First, post-World War II strategy.
Well, without a doubt, we do have to accept a certain amount of pain here to get to a better outcome. But that's also true if you go to the gym. So I'm not overly concerned about that. As far as what we've been doing, after World War II, Europe was flat. Japan was flattened and nuked. China was flattened. I mean, all of our major competitors and partners were just ruined. Russia lost 20 million people in the war. We lost 400,000. I mean, the difference is just staggering. They all got ludicrously poor. As a result of this hellacious conflict, we got richer. So at the end of the war, we were actually 50% of the world's economy, and the Russians are romping and stomping across the center of Europe, and we didn't want them to take West Germany too. We didn't want them to take France and Britain too. So we set up a series of things that were designed to subsidize those guys and help them get back on their feet. And once they were somewhat back on their feet, we continued to do things that were designed to keep them on side, keep them moving in the right direction, keep them wealthy enough that they weren't tempted to vote in communism. Eurocommunism was a real threat in electoral politics in Italy and France as late as the mid-80s. You know, we're doing all these things to win a global conflict. And we did. We absolutely did. We bankrupted the Soviet Union. We no longer have to deal with the evil empire. We don't have to worry about communism taking over the world by force of arms. Now we have to worry about it taking over by force of argument from Harvard, but that's another thing. We can deal with that domestically. What we have now, though, is inertia. For 35 years since the end of the Cold War, Washington has operated on autopilot. And it has continued these lopsided trade deals and these lopsided defense deals. You look at NATO, we're picking up 70% of the bill to defend basically Europe. I mean, they're not defending us. There's nobody in North America who's going to invade us. So we're picking up 70% of the bill to defend them. How does that make sense? And why can't we get to something more like 50-50? And the same thing is true in trade. It is ridiculous that the EU charges four times the tariff on cars that the United States does. That means, basically, if you're in Europe, you probably don't buy an American car. It's ridiculous that India charges a 100% tariff on American motorcycles. That means Indians just don't buy American motorcycles. It's absurd that Canada, our closest trading partner, charges 280% tariffs on a lot of our dairy goods. What does that mean? It doesn't mean Canada's collecting taxes on American dairy goods. It means Canadians aren't buying American dairy goods. And that's what Trump's trying to fix. We've got to get to the point where these deals are fair, where our partners, whether it's defense or trade, our partners really are partners and not dependents. We're sick of these guys basically being teenagers in our basement who don't get a job, and we're just asking them to go apply a few places and maybe contribute a bit.
Yeah, and what it seems to me like, and Mike, you're probably feeling this, it seems to me like because we pick up the tab, Americans are poorer, and they're able to live, you know, with bigger healthcare policies and all that, and then they look down their nose at us, and yet we seem like we're paying for it.
Yes, that's clearly
well,
we
that's
are.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what I like what you shared, Rod, is you know, we're not asking them to necessarily even pick up all of it. Let's get to a 50-50 partnership on some of this stuff. And
we're not asking for anything unfair. We're asking to have the same access to their markets that we've given them for decades. We're asking for the same tariff rates from them that we charge them. We are asking to bring those down even lower, maybe to zero in a lot of cases, hopefully. And we're asking them to pick up some of the bill for their own defense. Europe is not some impoverished third world hellhole. Europe is one of the richest portions of planet Earth. There is no excuse for Germany to be training its soldiers with broomsticks because their defense budget can't afford rifles. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. And when they cry, oh my goodness, Russia's coming. Well, you don't act like Russia's coming. You act like if they did come, we would do all the fighting and dying. And that's just ridiculous. We're not going to do that anymore. But if they want to be partners, we can be equal partners and some of the best partners they've ever had, as we've demonstrated for the last 70 years.
Well, for the last 35 years, at least, I think we've been telling the Europeans, you know, we want fairness, give us fairness. And it's gotten us nowhere because we just say, hey, how about this? And they say, no. The art of the deal is what changes things. It's Donald Trump's approach. Can you explain the art of the deal? And again, we have 30 seconds, but we'll come right back and we'll keep going.
Well, we'll probably need that extra time. But yeah, Trump's been writing about this since 1987. I don't know why anybody's surprised about anything he's doing because he laid it all out in a book on negotiating from decades ago. I was a teenager when that book came out. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's coming in high. He'll get to the point that he actually was seeking. And he's expecting a good deal, not just for himself, but for everybody, because that's how you do long-term business. And that's what we're going to do here. We're going to set the world right. We're going to get to a point where everybody's prospering together. And I guarantee you, if you really do get to free or mostly free trade, there will be an explosion in prosperity.
Okay, so we're talking with Rod Martin, maybe about the golden age for America and the world. We'll cover this and more when we come right back after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Co-host Mike Carter and our guest, Rod Martin, and we're talking about the art of the deal with President Trump. And I got to tell you, I was recently in contact with some insiders inside the White House, and they say, these people who say that President Trump is getting knee-jerk reactions and he's just a blowhard and he gets upset and so he just throws out these. I'm told that the tariffs are extremely well calculated. They're more data-driven than any policy they've ever seen in the White House. And it's being run by a guy that I worked with a little bit named Kevin Hassett. Kevin actually wrote an endorsement cover note for my book, Secret Weapon. I think he wrote a note for Game Plan. I remember meeting him at AEI Institute in D.C., sat down with him, and I was talking about economic warfare. And he didn't really, it's like, what's economic warfare? He was a complete free trade guy, free market guy, everything. I said, but everybody doesn't always act rationally. And he, at first, was like, explain that to me. And so I gave him the example. I said, well, Osama bin Laden doesn't act rationally. He had a $300 million fortune in at the turn of the last century, and he chose to throw it all away and die in a cave. How rational is that? But then I realized, actually, it was extremely rational from his worldview. From the worldview of Osama bin Laden, he just had a very long time horizon. He was looking at eternity rather than looking at what was happening immediately, which is what Christians do. We look at eternity. So actually, maybe he was acting rationally. Anyway, Hasek...
But I was with him just about a year ago. I saw him here at an event, and he's, you not only helped him understand that, but he was speaking very highly of you. And of course, he's endorsed the books, but he's recognized that now, and how fun it is that he's in the White House working through this strategy.
Honestly, I don't know if that he would have been President Trump's top pick unless he understood economic warfare. And I'm at least... part of the education that was on that path for him to get economic warfare. Anyway, but we've got Rod. And Rod, this looks like a chaos in the White House to many Americans, but it isn't. It is data-driven, and you have explained it so well in your Substack, found at rodmartin.org, if you want to learn more, where you talked about a free trader's case for tariffs. Explain the art of the deal. How is President Trump applying this old artifact of taxation that we've for 35 years admitted we're the suckers in, but he's come in and changed things? How has he applied the art of the deal there?
Well, it's supposed to look like chaos. I don't understand why people don't understand that, except, of course, most people aren't very good at negotiating. They probably get ripped off at the car dealership too. You know, but this is just basic. Trump has the upper hand. He understands this is the world's largest consumer market, which apparently most of Washington doesn't get. And therefore, all these countries desperately need access to it. That's how they make money. China depends on exports. Germany depends on exports. Japan depends on exports. South Korea depends on exports. We don't. We really don't. And not only that, but we could produce anything they're producing. And, you know, take the rare earths case. You know, we have more than enough to be the world's largest exporter of rare earths. We just gave up the field, which is a pretty stupid thing from a national security point of view. So what is Trump doing? Well, he told you in the art of the deal years ago. He describes his negotiation with Tiffany's, the famous jewelry outlet. Tiffany's has its flagship store right there on Fifth Avenue. Trump wanted to build Trump Tower. That required him obtaining air rights in New York, which belonged to Tiffany's, and Tiffany's didn't want to sell. So Trump solved his problem. He goes to the architect. He says, I want you to design the most beautiful building you can possibly imagine, and I want you to design the ugliest building you can possibly dream up, that we can build on this without the air rights so that the property values at Tiffany's get tanked. So he took the architectural plans to Tiffany's, and lo and behold, they made a deal, and both companies got rich together. So this is just how Trump thinks. He's going to give you both the carrot and the stick, but he's usually going to start with the stick, and that way he can negotiate a better deal. And this isn't a better deal in this case for the Trump organization or for Trump's political career. He's term limited. He's not coming back. So what is it for? It's for the good of America. It's for the good of common people who need jobs here now and good prices, because if we have proper access to their markets, what comes with that is lower tariffs, cheaper prices for everybody on everything.
But you have to be willing. It's the same thing. You know, I know, Mike, you've been this. I watched my wife, Marnie, get horrified at the car dealership when I said, you know what? I don't need this. I don't need this. That price, it's unfair. I'm leaving. And, of course, they run after you when you leave and try and drag you back. All right, so he's done this, the art of the deal, and it's been effective. What is it now? Last I heard, 130 nations have come to the table, according to Kevin Hassett, saying, no, let's renegotiate. Let's do this. But one has been left out. Which one is that?
Well, that would be China, because the aim with China is not primarily what I'm describing. The aim with China is primarily to deal with a hostile foreign power that routinely threatens to attack us with nuclear weapons. I just can't stress that enough. Who does that kind of thing? I mean, can you imagine if an American president went on television and told the American people that, well, if the Chinese don't act right, we're just going to blow up Beijing? I mean, no one would do such a thing, but the Chinese do it all the time. And we know they're doing all kinds of bioweapons research, some of which was funded by Fauci, just to be clear. I don't know. First of all, I can't imagine the mindset that would cause you to think engineering bioweapons is a good idea. I can't imagine the mindset that suggests that you would want to help the Chinese do it, but I really, really can't imagine why they would need our money. So, I mean, everything about that is the kind of socialist mishmash that you've come to expect from the Democrat Party. Nevertheless, these are bad people. They are absolutely intent on power at all costs. They're committing a genocide among the Uyghurs right now. They're suppressing the church. They're doing everything they can to tank us globally. And Donald Trump is just saying, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to decouple these two economies. And that doesn't mean we won't import anymore. We just may not import from you. And when China either comes to heel and we make some deals that make sense, like them repealing their new laws that actually legalize what they've been doing forever, which is intellectual property theft. Yeah, they just passed a new legislative package that makes that perfectly legal under Chinese law. Well, that doesn't comport with World Trade Organization rules. What's this rules-based order we're supposed to be defending when our main competitors don't follow those rules, don't even pretend to anymore? So Trump is taking that on as what it is. They are an enemy, and they can either start acting like a friend or we can continue to treat them as an enemy. It's time.
Yeah, let's be clear, and I know you, Rod, well. You don't mean the bad people being the Chinese people. They are very good people. You mean the Chinese Communist Party and the leaders who are pigs, literally pigs. So
they're terrible, terrible people. These are brutal murderers. And our pretending that they aren't so we can get a cheaper iPhone is a sick joke. How much would the Democrats have been willing to trade with Hitler's Germany? Because that's what we're talking about here, and there's no escaping it.
Well, and when you say this, the people who are most hurt by the Chinese Communist Party are the Chinese people. And we could be doing the most humanitarian thing possible. And I want to delve into this on China just for a second, because we had Reggie Littlejohn on Pirate Money Radio not long ago, and she talked about the womb police and the culture of death that has just destroyed China. And it reminded me of something you told me years ago. Nobody believed you, but you said China's population is falling and China as a nation is failing. Can you describe that briefly?
It's simple demography. You have to have 2.1 children per woman to maintain your population at a particular size. The leftists in Beijing agreed with the leftists in California that the biggest problem facing the world was overpopulation. They literally mean the joke on the internet that you are the carbon they want to reduce. And by the way, China is not reducing carbon of any sort except people. So, the idea that they're on board with the environmental agenda is a joke. They're funding the environmental agenda to restrain us from prosperity so they can gain an upper hand in the world. But this is a government that murdered 65 million of its own people in the 20th century. This is a country that is carrying out a genocide right now. And their biggest genocide is really against their own people, not just in the ways I described, but the implicit means of the one-child policy. The one-child policy was their answer to the overpopulation problem. Well, first of all, God tells you, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. More people means more division of labor, more creativity, more geniuses, more everything that's good. And we've seen that in the world over the last lifetime. As the number of people has tripled and the amount of food available for them has actually multiplied beyond that. More people is a good thing. But China is now on track, and intractably so, not at 2.1 total fertility rate, but at 1.0, dropping fast towards 0.8, where we think it'll stabilize. But if it stabilizes at 0.8, By the end of the century, they will have lost 75% of their current population. America will be bigger than China by the end of the century. And the economic chaos that ensues from that over the next two, three, four decades is just unprecedented in human history.
Well, they've suckered us in and said, you got to have access to Chinese markets, and therefore give us your intellectual property, move everything here, let us be your manufacturing base. And yet their population is collapsing. And it's collapsing from a cultural standpoint, because once they instituted the one-child policy, they actually convinced people it's a bad thing to have babies, particularly baby girls. And so they stopped having baby girls. And now with a two-child or a three-child policy, it doesn't matter. The culture is sick. We need to revitalize the Chinese culture. We need to show them the love of Christ, literally. The solution to China is the gospel of Jesus Christ, and we need to carry it. All right, we've been talking with the amazing Rod Martin. We've been talking about China and tariffs and trade wars and all of that. We'll be talking more of this when we come back, and I want to even get into the future of technology, and then I want to talk with Rod about his faith. We've got to bring the gospel around the world and maybe around the universe. We'll be right back with Rod Martin, and we'll be talking about the future of mankind.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and the co-host, Rod Martin, we're talking about the way that the trade wars and the tariffs and all that may impact you. They might impact your pocketbook. But there's the art of the deal at work here. There is an actual plan, and we're seeing it being used in two important ways. One is to expand free trade around the world, and Rod's described that to us, how President Trump is actually using tariffs to increase free trade and increase prosperity. At the same time, with the same single weapon, he's also putting the hammer down on communist China, who has caused nothing but chaos and mayhem and problems in the world. And Rod's just described how China is on a death march in their own society, but the future for humanity, is it dire or is it good? Rod, what are your thoughts?
Well, we really are on a brink of that golden age Donald Trump has been talking about, and you know that I've been talking about it longer than he has. Now, it could be a dark age, too. It could be a very high-tech dark age, and we've seen what that looks like in China with the social credit score system. You can show up at the bus station, and your ticket is canceled because they caught you on camera reading the wrong meme or going to a house church or something. They can make you an unperson in the electronic blink of an eye. That's all very possible here, and you saw a somewhat primitive version of that same technology in Orwell's 1984. The Chinese government saw 1984 as a how-to manual. It's just extraordinary. So could that come here? Yes, it absolutely could. And the building blocks are already in place.
Hey, let me jump in here for a second. Well, I want to say this because of something I picked up from some of my intelligence community buddies. That is true. Central bank digital currency. Who's the author, creator of that? Is it the World Economic Forum or is it Communist China? It's probably a combination of both. But that's the idea that they can stop you when you go to buy a bus ticket or want to buy a cheeseburger, and they can control you with your money. I do have good news I want to throw in here. And I think it's good news because the people in Brussels, and I'm getting a letter from this, basically have said that the number one threat to that is transactional gold and silver. And if we just pass this in Arkansas, signed in law by Governor Huckabee, your home state, Rod, we may have the opportunity to change the world with that. But
economic liberty. It's about economic liberty, pirate money, transactional gold and silver, and avoiding the social credit score stuff. It's significant.
Yep, and that's a threat. And Rod, you've been working with us from day one on that. Intellectually, we've been talking it out. We've hashed it out. You've been at every one of the summits we've had. You're a big part of making this happen. But that's the dark side, and we have a solution that Pirate Money Radio and our whole team, including Rod, have been putting forth as a solution. Okay, so that's the bad, the dark. Tell us the good.
The good is that if you can maintain liberty, we are on the cusp of an explosion in prosperity and the human frontier, like unto 1500, when the Spaniards had just discovered the New World. There's really only that comparison to it. And you see that in countless ways. You see it in life extension technologies that are going to make people live quite a bit longer, not forever. I mean, if you want to live forever, you need to talk to Jesus Christ. He can arrange that. If you want to talk to biochemists, we might get you 120 or 150 years. It's actually on the horizon. It's something that can really happen. And I know people think that stuff's crazy, but the average life expectancy in the United States in 1900 was 47. Now it's 80. So, you know, extension of life is actually a very real thing that we have experienced in this country. Not just that, you see it with Elon's rocket technology. The Starship program is just extraordinary. He's built a factory that's capable of building one a day. So you're going to have thousands of these ultimately. Does that mean you colonize Mars? Sure. It also means you could move an entire armored division anywhere on Earth in under an hour. That's going to make the United States geopolitically dominant in short order. And you just have a thousand different ways in which all of this conspires together to make the world better. And the most important piece of it, of course, is space. In space, you've got all the resources that you have here, some resources that you don't have here, and you have them in crazy abundance. And so once you start opening that up, you're going to dramatically reduce the cost of just about every commodity in sight, and that's going to raise the standard of living of everyone on this planet. And it's just going to be an amazing time to live if we can maintain liberty. And if we don't do that, it's going to be the worst time in human history.
Well, the best way I know to maintain liberty is to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I know, Rod, you've been active and involved with this in your church, in the Southern Baptist Convention, and everywhere else. How do we spread the message of liberty? First, before I go there, I want to remind people, if you want to learn more, you've been hearing Rod Martin, and you want to learn more about what Rod is doing, go to rodmartin.org and subscribe to his Substack to learn more. And you'll get, you know, every day or two, you'll get brilliance like you've heard on this radio program.
Yeah, things like the green movement is like a watermelon, green on the outside, but all red in the middle. I mean,
red meaning communist.
Yeah, exactly. That's good stuff.
No, it is good stuff. And it's easy to understand. All right, Rod. So let's talk about the spread of the gospel to promote liberty, because Christ has been made known unto us liberty. When Christ, he said, you know, when he read from the passage on that moment, he said to bring liberty to the captives. That's the role of Christianity. Explain liberty from a Christian perspective.
Well, you're exactly right. And you will notice that the three parts of the world are those which come from a Christian worldview, and those other portions that have been heavily influenced by it. So South Korea, for instance, is about 50% Christian now. Japan is about 1% Christian, but Douglas MacArthur wrote its constitution. So, you know, that's getting you there. What we have in Christianity is the idea, first and foremost, of the sovereignty of God, that there actually is a lawgiver who is above all human opinion and all human governments. And second, that he has placed his image on all humans. So human beings actually bear the image of God. They have dignity in and of themselves, and therefore they have inherent inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And Jefferson didn't just flourish with pursuit of happiness, as some political scientists claim. That was a deliberate change from John Locke's Life, Liberty, and Property, because Jefferson understood, and Jefferson, of course, wasn't a Christian, but nearly everybody in that meeting was. They all understood that the most important thing is not property itself, but the right to pursue your own calling and gifts, which is already talked about right there in Scripture. We already have the picture of the division of labor in this idea of the body of Christ, that some people are heads and some people are hearts and some people like me are probably toenails or whatever, but they all have their place in the body and they're all essential to its functioning. That was already baked into the cake in the Christian worldview 1,700 years before Adam Smith articulated it in The Wealth of Nations. So everything we're talking about, whether it's human flourishing, whether it's prosperity, whether it's lifting people out of poverty, whether it's giving them freedom and dignity and protecting the rights of not just minorities, but that smallest minority, the individual, all of these things flow from a Christian worldview. And you're seeing increasingly people who have been known as being atheists talking about the necessity of the Christian worldview to maintain liberty. Elon Musk, of course, being one of the key proponents of that now.
Oh, it's fantastic. And I've seen President Trump speaking fondly of Christianity and the role that Christianity has played in his faith. I see what this is saying to me is that Christianity shouldn't be kept in its little Sunday box. It needs to break out into every aspect of our life. Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really where only true liberty comes from, is that freedom. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, uncertainty everywhere. And just having that trust in God and faith and knowing that he's ultimately in control, that's the ultimate peace people are going to have. That's the ultimate wealth you will have.
Yeah, and we're getting from the media, from the they call it the legacy media or maybe the wicked media. I don't know what you want to call it, but we're seeing, oh no, this is chaos. Don't do this. Don't look in this. It is actually an open door of liberty and freedom. You find Christ and you pursue truth and you see humanity flourish. I think that's your basic message, Rod.
It absolutely is. And of course, we're taping this in Passion Week. Sunday is Easter. And, you know, it's an important time to remember what Jesus Christ has done for us. We were dead in our trespasses. We are, you know, sin sounds like a Sunday school word. Okay, but what does it really mean? It means we're traitors against that king. That king has an absolute call on our every thought and action, and we are in rebellion kind of by nature. And there's no way for us to pay the price for that other than our own death, which really doesn't get you there and certainly doesn't do any good for you. So Jesus Christ came and lived a perfect sinless life and died on a cross that he could be the substitutionary atonement for each of us. He can pay our price. And then on Sunday, on Easter, he rose from the dead. He rose from the grave and he rules at the right hand of God the Father over all of us to this day. Those bedrock truths are the core of the idea of liberty. They're the core of your individual liberty from sin and death.
Amen. Thank you so much, Rod, for joining us on Pirate Money Radio. You may have some questions. You may have comments. You can reach out to us at afr@piratemoneyradio.com. That's afr@piratemoneyradio.com. And of course, we need to pray. We need to pray for America to return to God's principles. Pray for the world to return to its principles. Let's get back to business and do it God's way. This is Pirate Money. Listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, etc. It's Kevin Freeman, joined by Mike Carter and Pirate Money Radio. Argh!